Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Cole Hornaday.
Oh, hey.
Chris Kso.
A good kotati to you.
And Nicole Lamb.
I got nothing to follow that.
So if you don't know what Chris is talking about, visit at the end of episode 85, I believe.
It's going to be my thing.
All right.
What's it? Is it that? Is that kotati like a confectioner? A confection or something?
Now I want it to be.
No.
Actually, okay. I had to look up to get to find an image to put on the podcast for last week to find out what a kotati was.
I missed this conversation.
Were you there with us last week when we were recording?
No, you don't remember.
You mean
kotati?
20 minutes ago?
No.
In the future? Right. Okay, I'm getting a headache.
Let's time travel. Right. X-Men, yeah. Go.
They're the ones that created the blue areas of the moons.
It was an answer of one of his quiz time
That's
questions.
Right. That's right.
All right.
That whole kotati. Trivia thing. Yeah, the kotati.
All right. So, hey, Chris and Nicole. This is Monday, October 3rd, 2016. Is there anything coming up at the dungeon that you'd like our listeners to know about?
Most certainly. I'm going to go through a couple things, and then we're going to lay some awesome event to be determined dates on you.
You go first.
So, first up, we have on Saturday, October 22nd, from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., we'll have Janet Harvey, who is the writer of Oni Press's Angel City, number one, that we will have her here in the store. And so that will be really cool. Her family has been very supportive. They've been doing pre-orders with us. So I think that's pretty
excellent.
Rad. And then we have started up our kids drawing club. That was coming out of our Making Comics with Kids with Chris Sheridan. That happened, I think, way back in August. So we'll be doing the second and fourth Sundays. And you can find out more information about that on our website, comicsdungeon.com/kidsevent will get you in the approximate area. And then we have something very cool on the horizon from Valiant Entertainment. I will give this over to Chris now.
So I'll make this kind of brief, but it's pretty awesome. So not too brief. But
yes.
So in a couple months, Valiant announced that they're going to have a series of variants that are all photographs of cats doing cosplay their characters. So we got a phone call from one of our friends at Valiant a little while ago, and he was like, "Have you heard about this?" I'm like, "Yes, we did."
How do you not? It's cats cosplaying on comic book covers.
It's like one of the best pieces of comic news recently.
Lost our minds.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he said, "Like, well, apparently the photographers are in your area. They're kind of like in Kent or somewhere around
that, right?"
And we were like, "Oh my! Oh yeah." And he's like, "Well, they were looking to have maybe a signing event. And would you maybe want to do that?" We're like, yes. So we still have to nail down the specifics, but we're aiming to try and get the photographers and the cats.
Yes, and the cats in the store.
Oh,
there are two cats, one who does more of the photography than others, but they do a bunch of other stuff besides the Valiant. They have a Tumblr page, I believe.
They have a Tumblr page, and it's full of like the cat, one of the cats dressed as the Winter Soldier and as your favorite video game characters.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, and we'll also make that into a Valiant specific and cat specific sale, because there's a lot of cat comics.
A lot of cat comics in the world. A lot of good cat comics, might I add. Yes.
So stay tuned to that as we kind of nail it
down. On our Facebook and our website, we will be promoting that once we nail that down.
That's fantastic.
I know a certain Gunmetal Gray, world's longest cat, would be very interested in learning more about
this. He does already have a feel for what the store is like here, because he has been a special guest here at the store. You
know, we will ask in advance.
He keeps asking when he can come back, but he makes Chris really, really nervous.
Nervous.
We will ask in advance that if any of our listeners like to bring their dogs in on Saturdays, just keep posted on our page, and we might tell you a Saturday to hold off on the dogs.
Do you normally allow people to bring their dogs?
Oh yeah.
Yes, we do.
I
usually
prefer the dogs over the people.
An extremely, extremely dog friendly establishment.
That's great to hear. I'm with you, actually. This is apropos of nothing, but I like dogs more than I like people. And every dog I see on the sidewalk, I just want to go up and molest.
It's just
but
your
I
best friend
don't,
ever.
Because then I would have to interact with its person.
Yep. Yes. Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Anyway, moving on. So cats, cosplaying comic book cats will be in Comics Dungeon perhaps at an undisclosed date.
Yes. Yes.
Watch this space for more news on that, or like Comics Dungeon on Facebook.
And the cat cosplay variants, I think, are being solicited as we speak.
Yeah, I think in the
for order. So
December-ish release, but we'll keep posted on that.
Exactly.
Too.
Awesome. Okay. Cool. Thanks, guys. Mm-hmm. Moving on. Apparently, September 25th was National Comic Book Day. I saw this
which
on
is exactly what? How you what? Need to start that with. Apparently, apparently. Well, see, we're all like, there.
I hadn't
I
heard
not
about
get
it.
The memo.
I hadn't
you
heard
guys
it.
Didn't even get the memo. I
sent the show sheet to everybody, and immediately, like, Chris posted on our Facebook mm-hmm.
I went into
group.
Detective mode.
It's like, what is this all about? And what was it?
So every article I could see about it was the most vague white bread article of like comics were created whenever. Yeah.
And they all started with Biff Boom Pow.
Yeah, there's a video
they?
That yeah. shows Adam West Batman.
Of course.
It's like, oh, come on. There's no actual website for it. So I think it's just one of those like today is Taco Day kind of things.
National Donut Day.
My criticism is that there are people somewhere in the federal government it is their job to come up with some type of, you know, nationally recognized holiday for every bloody day of the year.
Seriously.
That isn't already, you know,
yeah.
there is a calendar. Yeah. No, I mean, in my job, I was like encouraged to, you know, find out when it's, you know, National Yo-Yo Day and let's recognize it on social media. And I'm like, you know, I got legit things to do.
Yeah.
Well, there was Bi Visibility Day, which I was telling Chris about. And I was like, why didn't all the bisexuals get the email? Get an email.
Yeah.
What the hey who? Huh? What?
This National Day organization really needs to step up their communication.
They really need to let us know. The comic book stores don't know it's National Comic Book Day. The bisexuals only find out through their Facebook feeds of other bisexuals. Come
and
on.
So Marvel did.
Taco fans are SOL.
Yeah,
well, that's
what?
Every Tuesday.
Good point, sir. Good point.
All right. So, Chris, what did Marvel do?
No, Marvel did release like a free digital comic that day, which kind of goes to tell that Marvel was just like, oh, we should do a thing.
Yeah.
Oh, it's too late to print something. So, House of M. Have House of M. Here we go.
Was that what it was?
I think so. That's the only picture that showed up when I looked up. I was like, okay.
This is just lame across the board. Somebody needs to have their wrist slapped.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I thought we were going somewhere else. Darker. For a second, I was like, whoa.
What did you think I was going to say,
this just
Nicole?
Got dark.
Anyway. All
right, moving on.
Happy thoughts.
Let's talk about the Ignatz Awards. The 2016 Ignatz Awards winners were announced. Can anybody briefly just tell me what the Ignatz Awards are?
This one can.
So they're named after a character in the classic comic strip Crazy Cat by George Harriman. And it's a festival prize at Small Press Expo. And it's been doing it since 1997. And they recognize outstanding achievement in comics and cartooning. Interesting thing I found out, unlike the Eisners, the voting for Eisners is done. Anybody that is in the industry can vote. So mm-hmm. I voted before. For the Ignatz, it's only people attending the convention.
Oh. Okay.
So I'm actually curious, like, because that. I don't think that's a better or worse way to do it. I just think it's an interestingly different way to
do it.
It's
like an audience award.
Kind of, yeah. It's in the so Small Press Expo, it's going to lean towards things that are more indie alternative, stuff
so
like that.
We see the Daniel Klaus, we see the Adrian Tomain, we've seen Kate Beaton, you know, those types of things. So,
where is the Small Press Expo?
Oh, I forgot to write that down.
All right. That's cool.
Google.
Look it up. Maybe I'll put it in the show notes. Who knows? And I'll put all the winners in the show notes, too, because I think
surprised.
There's a lot. And
there
we don't
is a
need
lot.
To go
you
through
might just want to
list
do
all
the
of them.
Blank.
Yeah. So we'll link to it. So look those up if you care.
If not, then not.
If not, then not. And then maybe you'll care about this next one. Moving on. Valiant's Faith, who we're all fond of here at the Comics Dungeon, it has joined forces with the Keep Abreast Foundation to be the Comics Ambassador. And Keep Abreast is a breast cancer prevention nonprofit. And so that's pretty cool news.
Yeah, I think Faith is a really cool character. And the link that you provided us, which maybe you might want to put in the show notes as well.
Yeah,
has a variant cover of like everybody with their hand over one breast.
Right.
But it's I thought it was a very cool picture, and I think that Faith is a good person to put on anything about and empowering, mm-hmm. And being able to push through. And I just think she's wonderful in general. So to have her be a spokeswoman for something like
she's
that is cool.
Also very busy because Faith number 5, she meets Hillary Clinton.
What? Yeah, you know, she's starting to get a little like Wolverine Logan, like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, like, oof, you're on a lot of teams,
at least
you're
can
everywhere.
Fly. Wolverine's got to walk it.
That's true. Or somebody's got to cannonball him, you know, in the direction of. So I'm not really, I didn't do any research on the foundation, so I'm not sure about that, because I know there has been some breast cancer things that have been a little shady as far as foundations, but I'm assuming that, you know, Valiant being who they are, they probably, did them. Their research and are with a good foundation, because Faith is very popular and you wouldn't want to put her just anywhere, especially since she's getting more and more notoriety, which is very cool.
Yeah, I've never heard of the Keep a Breast Foundation, and I may have actually written this wrong, but I'm going to say it anyway. unlike other foundations, which is only about breast cancer awareness,
right,
this is about breast cancer prevention. Actual so prevention. They might actually do some monetary assistance.
Right.
But again, speaking out of my mouth hole. Right. I don't know. But
the whole thing with the hand over one breast was, you know, for the prevention aspect. So that,
right,
that's a good
right.
thing to promote no matter what. Right. So that's going to be a good message.
Cool. All right. Moving on. Marvel takes the she out of She-Hulk. Apparently, She-Hulk had a really terrible Civil War II and needs to...
You know, a lot of people are having a really bad Civil War II.
No, well, they killed Bruce Banner.
Had a bad Civil War
II.
They killed Bruce Banner, and
spoilers.
She got...
Well, we already spoiled that a few episodes ago. So sorry if this is your first time listening.
Well, and Jennifer got the crud beat out of her as well.
She did, yeah.
And when she came to, Captain Marvel told her that her cousin was dead, and she got... Well, she couldn't Hulk out because she already was.
Right.
Yeah, because Jennifer don't give a green about it.
Nope, she don't.
She don't give a green.
She-Hulk, you know, the heretofore She-Hulk was always a campy book. I don't think it was... Aside from its inception back in the 80s, since that point in time, it's always been a bit of an in-house parody book. It's kind of been...
Yeah, ever since John Byrne took over. Yeah. The original stuff was, well, campy, but still actually meant to be serious in its campiness. The stuff where they first introduced her.
The first series?
Yeah. I never took that as a humor piece, but all the John Byrne stuff was very parody.
Well, there's kitsch camp and camping.
Right.
You need to read the Susan Sontag article. Never mind.
So
not being serious.
Hulk is, it's coming out in December, written by Mariko Tamaki, with art by Nico Leon. And it's basically they're imbuing Jennifer with the 50-year history of the ongoing battle of the internal monster. And so they thought
it'd
be... Do you
think that has any chances? Or do you...
I'm extremely concerned about it. There's
really?
Quote from Tamaki. And Tamaki wrote This One Summer,
right?
Which is a very good book, award-winning, right? Or at least award-nominated. But there's a quote from her that says, Jen is absolutely shaped by the trauma she experienced, and much of it was inspired by thinking about how different people deal with the hard things that happen in their lives, how memory, trauma can infuse our whole being, be a physical presence in our lives. I was really into the idea of a Hulk, of the ability to transform into something close to monstrous, that's still human and heroic. It was interesting to think about what's human about Hulk and vice versa. So... It's an interesting quote, but it immediately pings to me as like a Jessica Jones sort of thing because of what she's experienced. So that's where my concern lies, because that, while it's interesting to do the trauma experience and some of that area, I'm also concerned about how they're going to portray Jennifer, because I do love how Jennifer like perseveres and doesn't give a green about a lot of stuff and doesn't take a lot of gruff, and I just don't want that to change. So that's where my concern lies, because Jessica Jones is terrible as a person. So I'm just wondering, like, while they did a great job with her trauma, like, she's not a very redeemable person, so I'm just concerned if they're trying to go into that darker region.
There is only so much drama and trauma and depression you can take in your comics.
Well, hopefully it's just, you know, when you're using a story to process that type of stuff, it's about transcendence. And I think that's what the original Alias series has ultimately succeeded in, and particularly the Netflix series, is that she transcends. And she also, you know, she conquers Kilgrave. But also she conquers that beast within herself. I'm looking forward to this book. You're shaking your head.
No, I don't agree with that. But why? Well, because I think she's an irredeemable character despite things, and
it's
a revenge
story. Are you talking about
with Jessica? I'm just wondering if they are going to go with that tone. But considering the writer that's on that, I was talking with Chris about this before the podcast, that that writer will probably do a really good job and get the shape of the character as
I
well.
I have faith on her. So.
Yeah, so I think that is something that will be good. I'm just concerned if they're going to do, you know, like DC tries to do dark and gritty or something like that. That they might go that way, and I don't think that would be good for She-Hulk, you know, as a character. Yeah, as a character.
Okay. All right, cool. Moving on, IDW moved to Penguin Random House for their book distribution. Now, this is for trades, I guess, that they take to places like Barnes & Noble and, well, what other bookstores are there? But it's part of a larger trend of publishers moving away from the monopolistic diamond, which still has the monopoly on weeklies and floppies and all.
Well, and the thing is, so Diamond will still rep IDW for their UK book sales.
Yeah.
So they're still holding a relationship, but this is actually a pretty big push for them to get wider distribution. And it's interesting just considering how they're also expanding with all their Hasbro stuff. So it means a little bit more exposure for things like My Little Pony and Transformers, G.I. Joe, Ninja Turtles, all of that. But also the big connection point is their imprint, the Top Shelf stuff, mm-hmm. which includes March, which is, I think... it's one of the top sellers, three of the top five graphic novel bestsellers in the book channel last month were all three volumes of March. So getting that even better exposure, better spread out is going to probably increase their market share quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just kind of an interesting growth. And I noticed that the Penguin, what is it?
Random House.
Penguin Random House. They've also got Archie, DC, Kodansha, and Titan Books, and Dark Horse.
Yeah.
So they're getting quite a bit going now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Cool. Does this mean anything for you guys?
No.
For a comic book store who deals in basically everything?
Yeah. I mean, I guess on a broader scale, more of this stuff can now reach a larger audience outside of us in different bookstores.
Yeah.
That might be negative. But Amazon already does that to us.
But at the same time, maybe they get into those comics through those channels, and then when they see a comic book store, may be more interested in stopping by and seeing what else there might be for them. So that could come around to be a positive thing for brick-and-mortar comic stores.
And just getting more of this out there is
exactly.
Yeah. So. Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Definitely.
More exposure.
Especially for the creators and things, too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
More exposure is not terrible.
Right.
All right. Well, that's the news we have this week. If one episode is not enough to cover all the news of the week, if you have a story that you want us to talk about, then let us know at perfectaboundpodcast@gmail.com. Let's move on to book report, everybody. And this week, let's start with you, Nicole. What do you want to tell us about?
I'm debating. I'll go with something that I really enjoyed, and that was Moon Cop. This came out, I guess, at this point, maybe a month ago. It's by Tom Gold. He did You're Just Jealous of My Jetpack, and there's another one that I can't remember now. But he's very, very dry in his storytelling. The art is cross-hatching with a blue hue, and it's a little bit above like stick figures, I would say, in its simplicity of figures. But this follows a, as you might guess, a moon cop who the civilization that they've created on the moon is kind of winding down. People are kind of over living on the moon. They're moving back to Earth and stuff like that. So as he's...
Are you saying we've used up all of the moon's resources?
No, it's more just that the appeal of living on a moon civilization has gone away.
Gotcha.
And people are moving on with their lives and moving
the novelty is worn off.
The novelty, exactly. Yeah. So it just follows him as he's making his daily rounds, and he... it's just very anecdotal. Like, you know, the place where he goes and gets donuts changes into a cafe, but then nobody comes into the cafe, and he strikes up a relationship with the girl working the counter and different things like that. And it was just very, very enjoyable piece for me, very simple. I read a lot of stuff that I don't necessarily like, or that's a little harder to get through, or maybe has a very complex art style. And so to read something like this is very refreshing. So if you like sort of dry, very simple sort of stories, I would definitely say try Moon Cop.
And that's a nice looking hardcover book.
It's nice. It's kind of small, but it's a nice hardbound. It's published by Drawn and Quarterly. So that might give you an idea. If you follow that publisher, you might get a sense of, kind of Fantagraphics style in nature. So, yeah, I'd recommend that.
Cool. All right. Moon Cop.
Moon Cop.
Thanks, Nicole. Cole Hornaday, what about you, sir?
Well, I read the latest volume of Saga by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples. This is volume 6. It includes issues 31 through 36 of the monthly series. Just to give you kind of a recap of what's happening, star-crossed lovers Marco and Alana are in a desperate search to find their daughter Hazel, who's been captured by, I think it's like the robot. I don't remember what the robot empire what they're called. Anyway, but they've been deposited in like this Supermax POW camp prison kind of place, Hazel and her grandmother. And there's a daycare center where Hazel is actually, it opens with this really lovely, lovely sequence where these children of different races are showing illustrations sort of to help process the trauma they've experienced in the different military conflicts they've been subjected to, except for Hazel, who just has this drawing of a Bigfoot, and she says, this is 2D Stinkfoot. He is a giant foot man who has very bad gas.
And there's a huge gaseous cloud coming out of the butt she drew.
I have yet to fall out of love with this series. It just never disappoints. And I think Vaughn is a really inspired writer. And in particular with this issue, he says things that are just so concise. So at one point, Hazel exposes herself to her teacher or her prison daycare matron is probably the best word, Noreen. And Noreen conks her head. Hazel's actually, she's a crossbreed between these two races, and she has wings, and she exposes her wings, and Noreen faints and conks her head and then winds up in the infirmary, where Hazel shows up and gives her a copy of the
book that brought them together, her parents together.
The kind of the alien bodiced, what do you call the romance novels?
Romance novels.
Yeah,
romance
novels. I just usually say
I know what you're trying to say, Cole, but I cannot think of the phrase.
Anyway, the book that inspired her parents to fall in love. And there's this wonderful comment. There's a series of comments that Noreen bodice busters. There's a wonderful comment that Noreen makes about the author, and she says, well, he's very clever, but I don't think artists should be ranked like racehorses, which I loved. And then she goes on to say, but anyone who thinks that one book has all the answers hasn't read enough books. Boom. And I was like, I cannot agree with that more about in so many different angles of reality. And I feel that way about myself. I just, I just need to read more books. So highly recommend this book. There's also, all the supporting characters just never cease to please and amaze. You know, there's this wonderfully realistic and unapologetic depiction of gay and transgendered characters, the supporting characters in this book. And I will follow this book probably to the very, very end.
Yeah, it's very, very consistent in its quality and characterization. And the world is very fleshed out, but not overly done either.
Cool.
It's a very accessible book.
Saga, Volume 6.
By Brian K. Vaughan. Thanks, Cole.
You bet.
And Chris Casso, what about you, sir?
I was wondering to do the positive or negative review.
Yeah, right? See, that's where I was at.
I got to cancel out your two positives. So I read The Cloud, published by Arkea, and let's see here. Let's butcher some names. Written by K.L. Zakopoulos and art by Vincenzo Balzano. So it's a beautiful book. It is actually a very, very, very beautiful book. It's got a rich palette of colors. And it's very engaging, and I thought I was going to love it completely, and I wanted to. And it's not even necessarily a bad story. It's just that the execution is exceedingly painful. There's a lack of transitions. There's flashbacks, and you don't even realize you're in a flashback. You're like, what's happening?
Oh, that's the worst.
It's very unclear about certain things. Like, there's an antagonist who's like a sky pilot with like red hair and a red beard, and like he's never quite named, and you're like, this is the main bad guy. And then later on you meet the main bad guy, but he looks like the first bad guy, and then the first bad guy shows up and he works for the main bad guy, but they look the same, and I don't who's what doing what. And it's very overwrought with establishing its themes. It's basically a post-apocalyptic world, and it doesn't really explain that well. And once you realize it's post-apocalyptic, but it's fantasy, and so you're wondering like how the fantasy works. Like Mad Max has kind of a mystic feel at times, but it's all rooted in the reality of everything that's happened. It's just that it's moved far long enough that their perceptions have changed. This one, you kind of get that's the feeling, but then there is like giant talking elephants and space dolphins, and you're like, wait, what? But you're supposed to be an analog about nuclear warfare and the fact that the clouds are, we can't see past the cloud. I don't know what's happening.
So it sounds a bit contrived.
It's very contrived.
It doesn't fit. Yeah.
And it has its certain things where it, you could tell that the creators are young enough that every movie from the 80s definitely influenced them, like Labyrinth and Dark Crystal and all that. And
so there's never ending story.
Never ending story. And so there's a couple contrived scenes where like all the different magical characters they met on their journey, you see the big change at the end, and there's like one page where you see them all reacting to the change, being like, he did it, and you're like, okay, whatever. So it's very pretty. It's $25. It's nicely bound. It's just a little hollow.
You wanted to like it.
I wanted to like
you
it.
You wanted
okay.
to.
I'm actually probably being a little too brutal.
Because it's you just, wanted to like it.
It introduced so many elements there. Like, but what about that? That was good. Okay, you don't care. Moving on. So, yeah, it's worth a look. Maybe get it on sale. But unfortunately, kind of a dud for me.
All right. The
Back
Cloud.
To me for half a second. Back to me. Okay, I'm fine. I looked
Focus.
It up. The term for episode? Romance novels that I was trying to find was bodice ripper. Bodice Ripper.
Yes.
I like Bodice Buster better.
Yeah, Bodice Buster has a better ring to it. Yeah, exactly.
It just wasn't resonating correctly. And I had to get a resonance lock on it. I feel better now. Thank you for indulging me.
And we have accuracy, which is really intense.
What we strive for.
Oh, boy.
Because we cannot get anything wrong on this on Air this.
Ever, never, show. Ever.
All right, well, that's Book Report, and that's our show, and coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Nicole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com and Comic Extension here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicextension.com. Subscribe to the podcast via iTunes or any way you get your podcasts, or go to perfectboundpodcast.com. You can send us an email, tell us what we got wrong, tell us what we got right, tell us what you like, give us quiz time questions. perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. Speaking of quiz time, get your quiz hats on, everybody. It's quiz time, and this week the questions come to us from me. And I was, as I was telling you earlier, I forgot that I had to write these questions until like a couple hours before the show started. So fortunately, I actually wrote a quiz time question set last week that I didn't use. So
oh,
I'm
good.
Just this
there
is a week old, but it's not really dated. So anyway, and it actually is kind of relevant, not relevant, but we talked about She-Hulk becoming Hulk. This one is all about the TV and movie incarnations of the Hulk. So number one.
Phone a husband.
Number one. The 1978 TV show The Incredible Hulk starred Lou Ferrigno as the Hulk and Bill Bixby as who? Chris.
David Banner.
Yes, David Banner. And why is that so interesting?
Because the producers thought that Bruce was too gay a name.
That wow. is mostly true.
That's kind of an urban myth. I looked it up a little while ago. What did you learn about
it? So, Ken Johnson, the series producer, has never said that that was the case in changing Banner's first name to David. And there's no evidence that the network or studios asked for such a change. A contributing factor to the name change was Johnson's dislike for alliterative names, which are typically used in comic books. Johnson decided that David, his son's name, was more solid. But that is a perpetuating myth
It's typical of what Stan Lee would do with his characters. And what I heard is that he would come up with alliterative names like, you know, Bruce Banner, Reed Richards.
Peter Parker.
Because it helped him, Peter Parker, because it helped him remember them.
Yeah. All right. Question number two. 2003's Hulk, directed by Ang Lee, starred Eric Bana as Bruce Banner / the Hulk. Bana went on to play the villainous Nero in what sci-fi reboot? Chris.
Star Trek.
Yes, sir. All right, number three, 2008, The Incredible Hulk, directed by Louis Leterrier and starring Edward Norton as Bruce Banner. Who provided the voice of the Hulk? Chris?
Lou Ferrigno?
Yes, sir, Lou Ferrigno. Number four, Mark Ruffalo took over the role of Bruce Banner in Joss Whedon's 2012 of The Avengers. Who is uncredited as the voice of the Hulk?
Was that Lou Ferrigno?
It was indeed Lou Ferrigno.
Oh, Lou. Yeah.
And number five, finally, since I've run out of live-action Hulks, I'm going to ask you about professional wrestler Hulk Hogan.
Oh, okay.
Believe it or not, Hulk Hogan actually fought Rocky Balboa in the ring in Rocky III. What was Hulk's character's name? Everybody's looking at Chris.
We all look at Chris.
Wow.
Come on.
I do not know.
He was not Hulk Hogan in Rocky III. He played a character, and his name was Thunderlips.
Right.
Wow. Whoa.
All right.
Hey,
did you guys know that Mark Hamill played the voice of the Hulk in the cartoon?
Oh, no.
I did not know that.
It's a cartoon from the 80s.
90s.
Okay. Yeah.
Edward Norton did do the voice in the Hulk, Incredible Hulk video game that came out.
Interesting.
If you want to hear Edward Norton's soul die, then you should you should play that game because he sounds like what is phoning it in. Like, he sounds dead.
Yeah, he's probably contractually obligated
and
did not want
it.
It
was, really bad.
That's great. Yeah. All right. Well, that's our show. Thank you for listening. But I want to put in a special plug for our show next week. Coming up next week, we are going to have an interview with Fantagraphics curator Larry Reed and Mr. David Natale, whose aunt was a close personal friend of an R. Crumb. Have you ever heard of this guy, R. Crumb? I don't know.
Robert Crumb.
Some artist, some famed artist.
Bay Area underground artist?
Yeah.
Oh.
So we're gonna talk with those two guys, and we actually are going to talk to via telephone from Arizona, Aunt Mimi, who has some great stories about R. Crumb. So tune in next week, and we will see you then.